The Prohibition era continues to fascinate us, whether it's the gangsters and their battles with the law and with each other. Maybe it's the speakeasies and the new jazz music being played there. It's a compelling time in our country's history. And lucky for us, Norman Gilliland has found it intriguing enough to build a novel around it. Larry Mueller here. Norman Gilliland wears lots of hats here at Wisconsin Public Radio. He hosts the Midday University of the Air old-time radio drama. He's also one of our wonderful readers on Chapter a Day. And what you may not know is that Norman is also a talented novelist. His first was Sand Mansions, and most recently he's written Midnight Catch. And we're going to talk about that with him today and that era, and hope that you join in. And maybe you've got questions about what makes good literature or what really draws you into a story and makes you care about the characters. Maybe you enjoy historical fiction. Is there a particular time or era that fascinates you? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And Norman, thanks for coming.
Well, Larry, thanks for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, man. Well, when did you start writing fiction?
Oh, you know, when I was 11. Still working on that one.
Oh.
Needs a little polishing.
Well, I tell you, your earlier novel was Sand Mansions, and I have not read that. Is Midnight Catch related to it?
Yeah, though I do not use the word sequel, because they definitely are standalone, but there are things referred to in Midnight Catch that happen in Sand Mansions, and some of the characters come back from Sand Mansions. Sand Mansions set in the last quarter of the 19th century, but told in flashback from 1929, and this one all takes place in just 3 months at the end of 1929.
Yeah, it's a really gripping story.
Well, thanks.
I tell you, you and set it in Florida, and you have some experience with Florida.
Yeah, I have just reached the tipping point where I've lived more of my life in Wisconsin than I did in Florida. So yeah, I spent a lot of time down in North Florida.
So, and is that really kind of why, or what prompted you to write?
Oh, sure, yeah, because, you know, growing up, you come fascinated by the stories that you hear, little incidents, some of them documented, and some of them just kind of atmosphere. And so I worked a lot of those into the novel, just kind of coincidentally. There are sort of minor incidents that actually happened.
Well, that's kind of cool. I don't know, I hesitate. I don't want to give away too much.
That's tough, isn't it, with a mystery, as you know, because you want to write one too. It's a little tricky.
It is a little tricky, but it is kind of fun to be able to drop in some.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, and some of them are amusing incidents, and some of them are just touch and go, just referred to. But it was a colorful time and place.
You start with a very gripping. I mean, as I was reading this, I thought, man, this would make a great movie.
Well, thank you. Actually, there is a movie of the first chapter. That's what the trailer is.
Yeah. Oh, and we've got that trailer. And I should tell people, listen, go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and there is a trailer of the book. And if you can go to it while you're listening, that'd be wonderful too, just to see the trailer, and that might spark some questions or comments. And is this a new thing, trailers?
Yeah, fairly new thing to a book trailer. Of course, you know, movie trailers have been with us from the beginning, but book trailers, you know, as a kind of a big phenomenon, fairly recent. And what makes this one a little unconventional is that it's actually a dramatization of the entire first chapter in about 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Usually a book trailer, like a movie trailer, you get little, you know, snippets here and there. But it just, when I worked with this filmmaker, Frank Caruso, we just decided pretty early on, oh, let's just do the first chapter. There's not even any dialogue in it.
Yeah, that is very, very cool. Well, you chose, please do go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, click on the trailer, and you'll get a chance to see this gripping first chapter. And you chose the Prohibition era fascinated by that era?
Or? Yeah, well, partly that. I mean, in Sand Mansions, I chose Reconstruction, and in both cases, you have, well, for want of a better term, ordinary middle-class people kind of pushed to the limit and forced to do things that are illegal, and these are amateurs, and that's what fascinates me, is that point, that again, that tipping point where a kind of a everyday middle-class person crosses the line and starts engaging in criminal activity, and of course, it's a steep learning curve. I'm not interested in professional criminals, you know, it's too slick. I'm interested in the psychology and, again, kind of the whole aspect of the learning and how far will this person go to compromise his or her values.
Well, and isn't it Richard Ward? Isn't that the guy who's running?
Yeah. Right, Richard Ward. Yeah, and he's the guy who, although he's I would say, pleasantly amoral in a lot of ways. He just kind of does things at the spur of the moment. But he has his redeeming social value too, and so he's a real mix, like most people are.
And so, and he's as I was reading about trailing out in the ocean and meeting people in the middle of nowhere in the ocean, and then finding their way back, and
right.
Lots of room for high drama there.
Yes, and it's actually based on a book. A nonfiction book, a reminiscence called Rum Runner by rum runner who was up in Canada during Prohibition. And I got some of the details from his book as the kind of the crazy stuff that actually happened. It was a dangerous and for him, and I think I can say for Richard Ward also, not, as it turned out, very profitable business.
talking with Norman Gilliland today, wearing a lot of hats at Wisconsin Public Radio. And this one takes him away from Wisconsin Public Radio with a novel called Midnight Catch. Fun talking with him about the novel. You may have a question about it or about writing or how he writes. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Click on that trailer while you're there and get a look at it as well. This Prohibition era, by the way, is what Ken Burns is.
Yes, he did a documentary.
Documentary. And another Wisconsin author, Jennifer Cheverini, her almost latest, one of her last books, was about that era as well. So.
Yeah, you know, and it's not just Prohibition that fascinates me about those years. Also, the big player in this book is radio. I mean, what was radio like in 1929? It was really on the ascent, you know, and it was that medium that seemed to be boundless in its capabilities. And so radio plays a big part in the book.
Yeah, and I like that, too. And you have a guy with a voice like yours, a golden voice, that plays a pretty big role in
that. Oh, for sure. He's from Wisconsin. Yes. Yeah, so he's a kind of a dual role as a labor agitator and an itinerant folk singer, which is not at all far-fetched, I would say. And he's kind of an interesting character, too. He's actually a socialist. And then he starts singing songs, but also then kind of talking politics on the radio, and it gets a little tricky. It gets a little dangerous at times for him to do that. But he's a Wisconsinite for sure.
Yeah, and I liked him. He actually almost doesn't like his newfound popularity as a singer.
That's right. Yeah, he's a guy that's, you know, he would not be that much fun at a party because he's so serious about everything. He sees kind of the glass being half empty no matter what. And that's what drives some people, you know, the kind of agitators or active people, activists, let's say. So he's always got that aspect to him. He's not exactly a fun-loving guy, but he's really interesting and he's certainly intense.
Well, why don't you, for us, you know, I sort of outline in a way the book, but give our listeners a little story here.
Well, if we go to northern Florida, or Florida in general, in the last months of 1929, it's already been in the Depression for a couple of years because of the land speculation that was so rampant in Florida in the 1920s. And so that bubble had already burst, and that had, of course, collapsed the economy of South Florida. It didn't affect North Florida so much, but it did obviously have some secondary effects. So you have that going as the back backdrop, and you have prohibition as a way out for Richard Ward. He thinks, okay, he's big on shortcuts. He was speculating in land when he was in his 20s. This is the way to make the fortune. And turns out not so. And so we have to pay some debts off. And what's the fast way to do that? Well, you start running rum. And so if there's a shortcut, he will always take it. And if he gets burned doing one thing, he'll just keep trying the next thing. He's irrepressible that way. And then you also have this young boy named Rex Holloman. He's 13 years old, and he stumbled across the aftermath of this strange. It's not so much grisly as it is just, wait a minute, this or something strange has happened here. And he stumbles across that. He thinks he can put it all behind him with a couple of diversions, one of which is radio. And it turns out that radio brings him right back to the crime. And every time somebody in this book thinks they're getting away from the crime, they're actually going right back toward it.
That's very cool. Norman Gilliland, our guest, as we talk with him about his novel, Midnight Catch, and it's published by
Nemo Productions and distributed by the University of Wisconsin Press.
Distributed by the University of Wisconsin Press. Joe in Cottage Grove, this is a little off. No, not really. He said, I'm preparing to publish my first book, fiction. What's the most important thing to know or do content-wise as I prepare the book to publish? So what's the most important thing to know or do content-wise as I prepare the book to publish?
I would say the most important thing to do is to have as many people as possible from various various walks of life to read the book and give you impressions and opinions, and you'd be surprised what comes out, everything from little typos to inconsistencies to things that just they don't get. And then in terms of the writing of the book, I think for fiction, almost always the most important thing is what we call in Chapter A the through line. Got to be a story that you can follow through there. It may be very, fuzzed up with subjective points of view and all kind of things like that, literary devices, time shifts, but there has to be a story through there because we all want a story.
Did the, how many years have you been reading on Chapter Day? I mean, you're a great reader, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering if that sort of has helped your career as a writer.
Yeah, it has affected it in a couple of ways. One is, again, the emphasis on the through line. It's one thing to think about being literate and literary and, artistic, but again, most people are in it for a story that they can follow. But the other thing is, and it's not just Chapter A Day, but radio in general, is I write for the ear. So I always write with the sense of what's it going to sound like. And ideally with a narrative that is credible as a one-on-one story telling.
Norman Gilliland, our guest today, as we talk with him about his book, Midnight Catch. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about writing and talking about a novel, Midnight Catch, today with Norman Gilliland, who, as we've been saying, lots of hats for Wisconsin Public Radio. Midday University of the Air, Old Time Radio, and, of course, wonderful reading he does on Chapter A Day, and he's got his own book out called Midnight Catch, a novel, and great to have him along. Certainly, if you'd like to join in with a question or comment, maybe about writing, maybe about the book itself, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Dick in Bark River, Michigan, I should just mention, as I mentioned Chapter A Day, really enjoys your reading on Chapter A Day, and she said that you are a master of bringing the written word to life.
Well, thank you. It's a challenge, but really one of the most fun things I do is to read for Chapter A Day. It's also the most difficult thing I do.
I at one time had wanted to read for Chapter A Day, and I brought it up with Carl, and Carl said, "Well, sure, we'll give you a shot." And I thought, before I do this, I'm going to read. I'll pick a book that I like, and I'll read a chapter or two, and record it.
Sure.
And I was so bad compared to to you guys. I said, I am never gonna do that.
It does take time to get up to speed.
You just don't sit down and start reading.
Somebody asked me that on the bus just yesterday. So do you actually like read the book before you read it for chapter a day? Oh, yes. More than once.
Yeah, it's really a gift to be able to do that. And I think you have to have a bit of acting chops too.
Oh, actually, that's what I say, is that the kind of misconception would be that chapter a day is reading a book. It's actually acting. You really are. Even if it's an historical narrative or something, there's still a voice that you have to find for that narrator.
Are you going to do your own for this book?
Actually, I did record just for fun the first half hour of it, but it is a challenge. It's hard, it's really hard to do your own stuff in particular.
Oh, it's just why?
I think because you have such clear ideas of how the voices should sound, and you know that you can't match them. There's no way any one person can match all those voices.
Oh, okay. I guess I can understand that. Marge sent us a Facebook comment. I loved Sand Mansions. Great book. I really got caught up in the story and characters. Hated to have it all end. Then the very day I finished the book, I found out your new book. Yay!
Well, that's great timing.
I look forward to reading Midnight Catch, Go to Orbit.
Well, thanks.
Thanks, Marge, for calling. I like that a lot. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. One of your characters, as we mentioned, has some really pretty strong political views as a labor agitator. Ties to Wisconsin, of course, from Wisconsin. Did you model him after anybody in particular?
Well, physically, yes, but that really doesn't apply because, you know, the character Jim Rhodes, in my mind, always stays the same, whereas the person who inspired him physically has changed over the years, and so it doesn't really apply. But in terms of his politics and singing on the radio, no, he would be a combination of people. I mean, you know, there were song gatherers back then. You know, Alan Lomax was one, even Percy Grainger. Yeah. So that part is kind of just based on a general type. And then his personality, maybe based on a couple of people I've interviewed over the years, political people that I've interviewed.
Okay. All right. I don't know why Woody Guthrie came into my head.
That's not far-fetched at all. I hadn't thought of Woody Guthrie, but that makes good sense because he was very political and he was kind of the itinerant folk singer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes good sense.
Well, and the two books they're not really related plot-wise.
No. There are references. It's kind of interesting, nostalgic references in Midnight Catch back to the good old days of Sand Mansions when things were so simple. You know, but of course, if you read Sand Mansions, you realize things were anything but simple back then either. And there's some of that. And some of the characters, of course, who we see born in Sand Mansions are middle-aged in Midnight Catch.
What about writing for children? Now, children play a fairly prominent role in the book. Oh. Are they harder to or easier to write?
You know, I don't write for children exactly. What I do is, and in Rex's case, yes, he's 13, and I write from his point of view for those parts of the book that have him in it. But I tend to write children as if they're adults with a kind of a different agenda. You know, in other words, I try not to write down. I try not to be patronizing when I write about children. I mean, you know, it worked really well for Mark Twain. You know, he's not writing down to Tom and Huck. He's just writing, that's the world as they see it.
Yeah, and you're able to do that, too. Now that you describe what we're getting at, I thought, that's exactly what you did.
Yeah, I mean, their point of view, maybe their priorities may be a little different to us, but they're kind of fully formed individuals. They just don't have the same experience that the adult would have in most cases.
Carol in DePere wondered about the behind the scenes of Chapter a Day. How do you know a book will be good to listen to And how much can a reader record at one time, and how does a reader prepare?
Well, you don't know by picking up a book for sure that it's going to work for chapter. And every now and then it'll happen where we'll get the rights to a book, and then the reader will say, well, you know, I'm kind of losing enthusiasm for this as the more I look at it. So you don't know for sure, but there are some kind of pointers, at least for me, I really like, although it's not necessary 100%, a first-person narrative, because you get this great kind of character built in right away, this point of view. I like not having thousands and thousands of characters, because you have to voice all of them and you have to keep them straight. And so if it's a relatively small cast of characters, that helps. And again, that through line, you know, is there a story that you can follow? And we usually have to edit the books for length, for the chapters and overall length, and for content too. So that's a part of it.
And then just the part about the part that I always found interesting, and how well you do it, and so does Carl, and so does Jim for that matter, when you're going from one sex to another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a challenge. There's some little things I suppose any actor could do. I'm not a trained actor, but I would think that there are certain things, that, depending upon exactly the sort of character is talking. But if you have a man and a woman in conversation and you're a male reader, you might soften. I don't think you necessarily raise your voice. You might lower it a little for one character and raise it slightly for the other. But it's probably more a matter of how they say things rather than the kind of the pitch that you use. It's the attitudes. Like if one character might be more hesitant in the way he or she talks, you try to give them some kind of mannerisms that make them different from the other person. It's when you have, like, I read a book recently that had several Vietnam-era characters in it, so these all 20-something guys, and you have three or four of them talking, then it's tough.
That would be really tough.
Mm-hmm. So you just do the best you can with it. And if you have to say, Ted said, then you stick that in to make it clear.
What do you think makes for a compelling fiction? What's the hook that grabs a reader and draws them in?
Well, there's that story and the characters and the setting. You know, those three things they teach you in English class. And I would maintain that the setting, the time and place, are a character in themselves. That they have their own personality. I mean, just as the Depression does, just as Reconstruction does, and in my next book, which is going to be set during World War II, that time had a character all its own too, if we're talking about the home front. I mean, there's a way of life that if we looked at it now, and you can get some inkling from old-time radio, for example, wow, different attitudes, different priorities, different needs and difficulties, and so that the time has a character all its own.
And that time is quite different from what you're writing about.
Yeah, quite different from the Depression, for sure. Yeah, things changed very rapidly on December 7th, 1941.
So that's a book that you're working on right now? Or?
In my head. Haven't written it down yet because I'm working on some other stuff too, but it's often good to let it sit there in your head for a while and kind of take form.
And what's the I've often asked authors this, and I get different answers. Everybody has a little different approach, but I wonder how you approach writing a novel like this. Do you I'm going to work an hour a day on this, or I'm going to do it at 4 a.m. or what?
That doesn't sound like me. Well, I mean, there are two parts to it. One is, without sounding too mystical about it, the book to some extent writes itself. When you're taking a shower or walking to work or doing something else that you should be paying attention to, suddenly you hear a little bit of dialogue or you see a little bit of action or something, and you think, okay, now that hooks up with this. And so to some extent it writes itself in your head. And it's the need to get those things down while you remember them and develop them that kind of prompts you to put pen to page or, finger to keyboard. And other than that, I just write when I can. I'm not so disciplined that I say I'm going to write for an hour a day, but it comes out to that. I usually write in the early evening and weekends.
Yeah. And in the process, do you have an outline?
No. The quick answer to that is no. Way back when I wrote my first novel, which I never got around to doing anything with back in the 70s, I wrote a couple of them with outline. And what the problem with an outline is that it becomes tedious and you become limited in your imagination. So if you have two characters talking, it's much better to let them talk and see what comes out than to say, oh, A is going to say to B, will you marry me, or hands up, or whatever. It's much better to come up with the characters and the setting and let things happen, put them together and let things happen.
It's scary, though, because if you don't know what's going to happen at the end.
Well, I usually have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen at the end and the beginning, but it's the getting from the beginning to the end that is the adventure.
And that's the fun part.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part of reading something like that, too. I mean, it's that there's always, in a mystery, when yours, at least, there's a very compelling first event and situation that happens. And then does it come back at the end?
Yes. Oh, it's never. We're never that far from it, because I'm really interested in the psychology of an event like that. And the whole premise of the book or the point of view is, what are the characters thinking? How are they reacting? It's not like forensic by any means, although that plays a small part in it. It's the event and how people react to it and how it affects them. So something that happens on page one, well, poor Rex is still having nightmares about it on page 50.
Yeah.
You know, and then what is he going to do about it? That is the question.
Yeah.
The repercussions.
Judith liked, and I did too, actually, Judith liked the character who was a female reporter.
Oh, yeah, Ainsley Harper.
Ainsley Harper. What about her? Where did she come from?
Okay, I will admit that in specific but superficial ways, she kind of comes out of an actress, Andy McDowell.
Ah!
It's just kind of what I thought of when I was hearing her voice. And other than that, I mean, the character is maybe a little bit like Marjorie Kennan Rawlings, who was a major Florida writer, author of The Yearling, and was a kind of a go-getter journalist author. But other than that, Ainsley Harper is just her own person.
You know, I thought that she might grow into a Hildy.
Well, again, she has her own mind and her own agenda, and I think what she does at the end is kind of surprised me, and certainly surprised everybody else. But that's what she did. That was her spontaneous or fairly spontaneous idea there.
Yeah, but I liked her a lot, and I just, she had her own little set of problems, but she's.
Yeah, she had her priorities, too, and she did have her problems. That's right. She's one of those people who is almost annoyingly cheerful until you realize that she does have issues that she has to deal with.
Yeah. Norman Gilliland, our guest today, talking with him about his book, Midnight Catch, a novel. Great. It's fun talking with him about the book and about literature and about writing novels, and I'm having a good time. Hope you're having a good time listening in. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show, and we would we'd love to hear from you there as well. You know, I one of the things that I meant to ask you about beforehand, and now it's kind of too late in a way, is to have you read a little piece from the book.
Well, I can read a very little piece.
Can you?
Would you like, what, 30 seconds or so?
Give us 30 seconds or a minute.
How about something kind of seasonal?
All right.
From chapter 14. Halloween took on a strange, somber tone. With the murders barely a month behind them, many neighbors were still wary of everyone who came to the door at night, and the porch lights seemed brighter this year. The trick-or-treaters were the usual assortment of pirates and pilots and it girls more demure than Clara Bow. But now they traveled in packs and shuffled quickly from one porch to the next. Rex went to only half a dozen homes before his awareness of the here and now became too keen to let him play the part of Zorro. He emptied his apples and pecans and chewing gum onto the dining room table, pulled off his mask and cape, and settled for watching the rest of the revelers from his bedroom window.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. And that should give people a little taste of what's in the book, a very small taste. There's a whole lot more in it. Sandra in Madison, let's go to you now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I wondered, since Norman, look forward to reading the book, I wondered, since most of it's already written itself, do you have to do very much rewriting? And if you do, how do you know when you're finished rewriting?
Two good questions. And the first answer is, oh, well, yes, I'd like to say that it wrote itself, which it did to some extent, but actually I did at least 17 rewrites.
Wow.
Of the whole thing. So some of them radical, the first one being a cut from 540 manuscript pages down to 360 when I realized what kind of book it really was. So lots of rewriting, which frankly is my favorite part of writing. I like to get that first draft down. Once I've got that, it's like, oh, I can make this so much better. I can, you know, make it so much better. And then the other part of the question, how do you know when it's done? I call that when it pushes back. When you push the book and you say, what if I change this to this? And it says, nope, it's better with what you've got. And you do that consistently, then it's done.
Excellent.
So do you have another book there? If you cut off 200 pages, is there another little book?
No, it's a lot of unnecessary sort of plotting background that really slowed things down. So some of it I thought, oh, gee, I'm sorry I have to cut this, but then when I went back later, there's no way I would have put it back in.
It's great.
Just like once it's gone, it's gone, and we're happier for it.
17.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, 17 rewrites over the course of a couple of years.
Yeah, so it's like 2 years or thereabouts to write this?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, oh, man, oh, man. What do you like to read for fun? Do you read for fun?
Yes, I do. But I mostly read biography.
Oh, you do?
Biography and some history. A little bit of fiction.
Anybody in particular that you like? Was my wife, for example, loves to read about Teddy Roosevelt.
Characters people that I like to read about. Teddy would be one. Well, of course, the Doris Kearns Goodwin books, you know, really great. The FDR ones. I confess I have a weakness for reading about presidents. But yeah, I do love it's called nowadays historical narrative. Again, it's a storytelling.
Yeah, and is there going to be any of that in your next book?
Well, there certainly will be historical background, yeah. I've got to do some research. I have to go back. I've done some, but I have to look into the newspapers. I've already done the radio drama listening and gotten that part of it down for the last 23 years. But, yes, newspapers and just the little things that bring it all to life.
I was thinking when I was thinking about you today and recalling all the fun I had listening to your little 1 minute mysteries.
Oh, right. Yeah, the after the fact mysteries.
After the fact mysteries were so much fun. I'd have those in the car.
No kidding.
And we'd play those as, all right, what's the answer?
That's great. Well, that's exactly how you're supposed to listen to them. I still have three that have never been broadcast. Three little mysteries. We'll get around to it some Sunday night.
Oh, man. I really enjoyed that. And I really enjoyed your book, too. This is so much fun. And you're going to be out on the road a little bit. You got November 8th. You're at
the book festival in Madison. Yeah. We'll be at A Room of One's Own.
On November 8th, so you'll be reading from that.
Yeah, and then December 1st, I'll be out at Arcadia Books in Spring Green.
December 1st.
In the afternoon, I think it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
And doing a reading for the, have you done it? Have done that in the past?
Ever? Oh, yeah. Readings at bookstores and, you know, dances and horse shows and parties. I'm available for all kinds of special events.
Oh, it's fun? You like it?
Oh, yeah. I love reading
to people.
Out loud, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love reading the book. Thank you so much.
Larry.
It's great fun. And you can see Norman at November 8th at the book festival. Again, where is it at?
A Room of One's Own, and that'll be 7:30 to 9 p.m.
7:30 to 9. Mm-hmm. And then December 1st at Arcadia Books in Spring Green.
Yeah. And there may be some others come up between now and then, but
Let us know, and we'll put it up on our Facebook page. Thanks,
right,
Norman.
Will do. Thank you, Larry.
Norman Gilliland, who, as we've said, wears a lot of hats here at Wisconsin Public Radio, hosts the Midday University of the Air, an old-time radio drama, and one of our wonderful readers on Chapter a Day, which obviously comes up right after this show.
I think I'm actually reading, yeah.
you're reading at 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. He's a master of weaving together a great tale. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with someone who took a real event and tells it like a novel. It's full of quirky characters and it's got kind of a suspenseful finale as well. And you may be surprised to know that it centers around the annual Duck Stamp Art Competition. And we will talk with author Martin Smith next. So I hope you'll stay tuned here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.